Omaha Public Radio presents another special luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a debate between the two candidates running for the United States House of Representatives from Nebraska's 2nd Congressional District. The participants will be incumbent Democrat Brad Ashford, seeking his second term in Congress, and challenger Republican Don Bacon, retired Brigadier General in the United States Air Force, and currently Assistant Professor in the Bellevue University College of Business. This program, co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Greater Omaha, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Friday afternoon, October 14, 2016, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the candidates and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is our moderator, Gary Kerr, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Each candidate will get a minute and 30 seconds to respond to each question, plus an additional 30 seconds for rebuttal on each question. The responses will be timed. The questions were prepared by a committee of a press club and league members. The candidates have not seen the questions in advance. There are two-minute closing statements. Please, no applause, catcalls, whistles, etc. during the debate. But you can do that now. So Don Bacon and Brad Ashford, please take your place at the podium. And Brad Ashford, you get first crack at the first question. Do you support your party's candidate for President of the United States, and why or why not?
Yes. Yes, I do. I think it's important to prioritize where we need to be as a country right now. And in my view, sort of the Nebraska way of looking at the world is bipartisanship, working with the legislative branch on an ongoing basis to solve the problems that we have to face. I think what Hillary brings, Secretary Clinton brings to the presidency is the experience of doing that. She has worked in the Senate with people like John McCain and Lindsey Graham in a very robust way. She works with Democrats and Republicans. She has experience in foreign affairs. She knows the leaders of all the major countries, certainly our allies, our NATO allies, and the leaders in the Middle East. She's dealt with the Russians. She's dealt with the Chinese. I think that's a critical part of what we need to move forward with as we get into the next 2017. And Hillary brings that to the table. So I support her for those reasons. I might say that she has said, and I certainly have said over and over again, that the email private server issue would indicate a lack of judgment. But I also know the FBI director, and I know that his conclusions are sound, and I have to believe in those. Thank you.
Don Bacon, you have a minute and 30.
Thank you, Gary, and welcome, everybody. What a great turnout here today. It's wonderful to see, and I'd like to introduce y'all later with my family. But thank you, Gary, and thank you, Brad, for making this possible. Between the two candidates that we have for our two nominees, I will support our nominee over Hillary Clinton. As I mentioned on Friday and Saturday, I was offended by the comments made. And I have a history in the Air Force as a five-time commander, enforcing, you know, behavior and enforcing, holding people accountable when they fail. We were judged having the best sexual assault response program in the entire Air Force. So I was at Ramstein, the best equal opportunity program at Offutt within the Air Combat Command of 23 wings. So something I take very serious. But in the end, it is between two candidates. And between the two, I'm going to be supporting our candidate. And why is that? Because as a commander, if I would have done and said the things that Donald Trump would have done, I very likely would have been fired. But if I would have done the things that Hillary Clinton did with those emails, 2,000 emails, some of them top secret, some of them above top secret, where you can even put them on a top secret computer on her personal server to include agents, secret agents, targeting information that we were doing in Iraq and Syria, I would have been court-martialed and gone to jail. And so I think there is a big contrast. But I think beyond that, we have to look at policy issues. Between the two, Hillary stands for bigger government, more regulations. She supports Obamacare. Would be with sanctuary cities. So I think on policy issues as well, I cannot support her, and I would support our nominee.
Brad Ashford, you have 30 seconds.
I think we've talked in this campaign about, the concept of bipartisanship and working together. I think we have to understand that there is no easy answer to these issues. But I do think, Don, you can't have it both ways. You can't have it both ways. You were for Donald Trump. You suggested he not run. And then now you're suggesting that he be president of the United States. I think that's an issue that we have to discuss.
Don Bacon?
Well, we do have a little difference there. Brad has been on the leadership team for Hillary Clinton from day one. Our nominee was not my first or second choice, but it is between these two. And I would have I thought at one point it would have been better for Governor Pence to be able to stand up. But in the end, it's between these two, and it's a binary choice. And I do support smaller government, limited government. I want to protect our taxpayers. And we have the worst business tax system in the world. Hillary Clinton's going to take us the wrong direction, and Brad stands with her. And I don't think it's good for our country.
New question, and this goes to you first, Don Bacon. Do you feel income disparity is an issue in America? And if so, what steps should Congress take to address it?
It is a problem. We've had an increase in income disparity. In fact, it's even been exacerbated over this last administration. And part of it is a government that keeps growing in size, and the bureaucracy and its regulations make it hard for folks working from the ground up, pulling themselves up by the bootstraps to get it done. It's so hard to start new businesses today. Our small business community has been stagnant for the last 6-7 years. Normally, 70% of all new hiring comes from small businesses. It's been stagnant that we've seen big business grow, and we've seen government jobs grow. But frankly, government has been a large weight around the backs and the necks of our entrepreneurs, the folks who are trying to start from the bottom up. You know, I've been working in North Omaha with some of the community leaders there, and they said it's so hard for the folks there to figure out how to start their businesses. It's all the red tape. You know, our business taxes in this country are the highest in the free world. You know, Hillary Clinton wants to raise them. That's who Brad's getting behind. We got to make it easier for folks to stand up and start a business and support our innovators. And our business climate today is hostile to it.
Brad Ashford, income disparity.
Yes, certainly. I mean, we've gone through two wars and a recession, and income disparity is clearly an issue. The question is, how do we address it? Over-regulation of our economy, certainly of our small business sector, is an issue. And that's why I have supported more than 50 times bills and amendments to reduce regulatory burden. That's why I've been endorsed by the NFIB and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, because I support initiatives to bring more vitality to small business. And I do, and my support also, as I've gone around the community and talked to over 80 businesses, had 388 business meetings, what we need also to do is to provide skills training so that we can meet the need for skilled labor. And that I have supported throughout my time in the legislature. I have supported several bills in Congress to do that as well. In fact, I have just co-sponsored a piece of legislation with Kevin Kramer from North Dakota and David Scott from Georgia, which will give to the Department of Labor the responsibility to work with black youth. 41% unemployment rate amongst black youth in this country from 18 to 35, and we need to aggressively bring those individuals into the 21st century job skills environment and attach them and connect them to work. So number one, regulations are too burdensome. Reducing those regulations, reducing taxes, and reducing the burden of the regulations of Obamacare and small business.
Don Bacon, you have 30 seconds.
Well, my opponent has had some endorsements out of the Washington, D.C. establishment, but I'm very proud of the 44 local elected officials and authorities here in our local area that have supported us. Just yesterday, we had 12 of the county sheriffs surrounding us, and to include our two counties. I would point out the NFIB has criticized Brad, though, for some of his votes. Two votes on Obamacare. They said it was terrible for small business. opposing frivolous lawsuit reform. They also mentioned that. But I would also point out that the most important bill that was passed by the House this last session was called the RAINS Act, and it would have been the most important thing to control regulations and to ensure we have a separation of powers restored, and Brad opposed it.
Brad Asher?
Yeah, I support the reduction of regulations. I have voted to an initiative which would reduce a one rate if you place a new regulation, if an agency adopts a new regulation, they must rescind another regulation. I support the efforts in the Congress to create a committee to look at all regulations to develop a plan to reduce them. So the RAINS Act is impractical because what in effect it would have done is it would have provided for prohibited issuing regulations that ameliorate the regulatory environment. So I opposed it for that reason.
New question, and Brad Ashford, you get this first. Although more than 90% of climate scientists say global warming is a real threat to our planet, there are those who still don't believe it. What is your opinion on this, and what do you believe should be done to protect our environment?
Well, it is a threat. It is a threat to our environment, and that's why I've supported various pieces of legislation to address it. The most important piece of legislation that we passed in the last 18 months in the budget act, we were able to extend the credit, environmental credit, production credits for wind energy. That was a big step, I think, for the country, a big step for the Congress. It's a constructive way to not only create jobs by enhancing wind energy opportunities, but addressing that problem. And secondarily, for those cities that have issues with pollution, we've created an opportunity for them to issue credits for the development of alternative forms of transportation. So we have a number of initiatives that we've supported. But clearly climate change is an issue. The production tax credits are a significant opportunity for us to address the environment. And we must look for new ways to get to 2030 to a place where we can have equal balance between all sources of energy. And I think we're getting there. And it's an all-hands-on-deck approach. It's the approach I support. It's the approach I supported in Congress and will continue to do so.
Don Bacon, you have a minute 30.
I enjoyed meeting with the air energy folks and those who do the technical work and the scientific work. And we've gotten to the point now where the efficiency and the effectiveness of air energy and renewable air sources are now, they can make money, they can make a profit. They don't need all the the tax incentives to thrive. So I think that's a great news story for us. Now I do believe that we do have global warming. We had the weather wing down at Offutt. It does weather for all the Army and all the Air Force, and I got to know those folks well, and it's clear that there is a gradual incline in weather, but it's a combination of secular weather patterns and as well as human effects of that. My view is that we got to keep making incremental progress so that our country keeps getting cleaner air, cleaner water, and we want to keep moving forward. I would oppose the more extreme measures that some of the far left are putting out there that will disrupt the economy. We got to just keep making incremental steps forward. Now, there were two, things that the EPA did that I thought crossed the line. When they put out the clean air provisions and the clean water, they did it around Congress. This is why we needed the RAINS Act, because they operated around Congress, and it undermined our economy, and it was not done in a democratic way. Our founding fathers said new legislation and executing the laws and then appealing them should be in separate branches of government. But what has happened is our bureaucracies have become all in one, and that's not good for our democracy.
Brad Ashford, 30 seconds.
And I did oppose the Waters of the U.S. and other efforts by the EPA to, I think, do act much more intrusively than necessary in order to correct these environmental problems. The RAINS Act was a mistake. The RAINS Act was a mistake because it would have prevented our agencies to pass rules and regulations that would have made the situation better. And so I do support reduction of rules and regulations. I do support congressional oversight. I think we ought to have a two-year budget cycle so that we can, in fact, spend a year out of our each Congress to look at oversight and provide oversight to the agencies that we regulate.
Don Bacon?
The Reins Act would have prevented bureaucracies from writing new regulations that were separate from any law from Congress. It was to help instill the constitutional principles that are so important to this country. And it said, basically, if a regulation costs $100 million, you have to get congressional approval. That was right. Speaker Ryan recently said it was the most important legislation to control regulations that came out of the House. Brad stood with Nancy Pelosi on this, and I think he was wrong.
New question, and Don Bacon, you get first shot at this. How will you address the immigration issue, both those coming in, refugees, for example, and undocumented immigrants already here?
Thank you. It's a great question. In fact, I spent most of the day yesterday in South Omaha, and it was a wonderful experience. Very much enjoyed it. I think you got to look at immigration in three different silos, if you will. First of all, you have between 300,000 and 400,000 folks coming here either illegally or undocumented, however you want to define that. But that's more than United States Air Force is in size. You know, the Air Force is 317,000. We can't sustain this as a country, 300,000 and 400,000 a year. Some of it's over the border, some of it's overstayed visas. So we got to fix that. And then we have to address the 12 million, roughly, folks who are here, mainly here to provide for their families and to, you know, make a living. And then we need to address legal immigration. It's broken. We can't even, our ranchers are crying out for migrant workers and seasonal workers, and it can't be done with the current system. So my view is we got to solve the first area first, the first silo there. We have to stop the 300,000 to 400,000, and we're going to do that through employer enforcement. I think we need to do it through increased security on the border. But you can't stop with a wall folks coming through if there are jobs and employers are not be held accountable. So you got to do employer enforcement and security. Once you do that, I believe that we can have a compassionate way ahead with the 12 million who are here. Some are serving in our military. Some are taking care of themselves and their families. I believe in a pathway for legalization, but not citizenship in those cases. And why do I say that? There are so many, there's millions of people trying to come here legally. Some are waiting 10 years. We should not put folks who came here illegally in front of them. But I do think we can take people out of the shadows, get them working, and put them in a legal status when they're good neighbors and good for our community.
Brad Asher?
Yeah, we supported, and I continue to support, enhanced enforcement on the border. I voted for in the 2015 budget bill the $100 billion increase in spending for the border control efforts, efforts on the border. But I do absolutely believe that one of the most significant failures of Congress since the Bush administration has been the failure to come to grips with the immigration issue. It is, in my view, patently unfair to say to a dreamer, for example, that came here at 1 year old or 2 years old without any choice, to deny that person who has lived here with his or her parents and has gone to school and wants to work, to deny that person citizenship. And I believe that of the 11 million that have come here, that there are any number of them who can apply for citizenship, apply for a green card, eventually earn citizenship, whether it's if they have a family relationship here, whether they have not violated the law, whether they're working. I think it's critical that we give those individuals a pathway to citizenship. You know, the Nebraska way, the way we legislate here is to find common ground. It's what we've been doing for the last 10 years is talking about border security and not about a solution to the immigration problem. So I do support a pathway to citizenship, earned citizenship, by those who have come here.
Don Bacon, 30 seconds.
Well, I do think that we can find middle ground on this, but you have to look at both. The left likes to talk about, you know, the 12 million, and the conservatives want to talk more about security. We got to put them together, and we can find compromise. But, you know, our president did those executive orders, again, working around Congress, and it made the environment toxic in that case. It became, at that point, you can't fix it. And then one area that my opponent and I do differ on, he voted for sanctuary cities, aligned with Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton in this case, and I think that was a failure. That's a breakdown of the rule of law. Our law enforcement folks, even in the cities that have it, would oppose it because they know you can't have rule of law when you say certain cities can do what they want.
Brad Asher?
You know, that was one of the most cynical votes. I've probably cast 30,000, 40,000 votes in my career, Don. That was one of the most cynical proposals that I have ever seen. what was a vote, what the vote was. First of all, we don't know what, do you know what a sanctuary city is? We don't know what a sanctuary city is. I mean, quite frankly, Omaha could qualify as one. But I'll tell because we issue licenses. We issue driver's licenses. Maybe it's a sanctuary city. But that vote would have cut off funding for our law enforcement people. It would have cut off funding at a time when we need more than ever our law enforcement fully funded. And the COPS program, which supports community policing, is critical. It was one of the worst efforts at trying of partisanship I have ever seen. Terribly cynical and wrong.
New question, and this goes to you first, Mr. Ashford. The Affordable Care Act, Mr. Ashford, what specific measures would you suggest to improve it? And Mr. Bacon, you have called for repeal. What specific replacements would you suggest? Mr. Ashford?
First of all, I think we have to give more options for small businesses to buy insurance. I don't think it's appropriate to restrict small businesses' ability to buy business or buy insurance to the three bronze, silver, and gold plans. I think we ought to, that will make it much easier for small businesses to buy insurance and for insurance companies to offer insurance to those companies. And I think that will reduce costs. I think we need to remove the mandates on small business, and I voted to do so. I voted to remove the 30-hour mandate. For example, I have signed on to bills to get rid of or delete, rescind the Cadillac tax, which will add up to 40% on to the cost of premiums. So there are a number of initiatives that impact small business that I have supported. We also ought to give insurance companies more ability to have more flexible products they can offer both to individuals and to small business. Talking to Steve Martin at Blue Cross and Blue Shield, that's one of the most important things he needs to get back into the marketplace. And we ought to make sure that people that do enroll in the ACA have the ability to do so, but they have to enroll during the enrollment period. But lastly, Lauren Hecker is a young lady. She's 14 years old. I visited her several times at Children's Hospital. She has a very serious childhood leukemia case. And she would not have insurance for the chemo treatments that she gets if the ACA was repealed. It's a terrible mistake, in my view.
Don Bacon, what specific replacements would you suggest?
And I'll get to that, but let me just address the pre-existing conditions. It's not an all or nothing. Often, folks on the left like to explain it that way. We can walk away from Obamacare and still ensure they have pre-existing coverage. We can still put those provisions in, and folks who are 26 and under be covered by their families. Today in the newspaper, the average family through Obamacare is going to be paying $500 to $700 more a month with the new rate increases. That is a sign right there that this thing is broke. We're talking a 50% increase for many families in our local area. It's unsustainable. In the end, we can't have federal bureaucrats, in my mind, running health care. A lot of the proposals Brad has mentioned are part of the proposals the Republicans are putting out to replace it, but he still would leave it under federal bureaucrat's direction. We need to get health care back down to the state level for regulatory guidance. We need to have more competition that drives down costs. I have one example, even with our own governor. He was told he had to get an MRI, I think it was, and he shopped around, found one that was 50% less than another one. If we had a little more of that instituted in, we could drive down costs. We need to do tort reform and lower the cost of defensive medicine. We need to provide tax incentives for those who get rates or coverage on the individual basis that equates to what people get with employers, because right now it's unequal. So there's a lot of things that we could do. The main thing is we should provide portable insurance where people can take it from job to job.
Brad Ashford, 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think, Don, you support the price bill. And what the price bill would do would be to rescind the pre-existing condition provisions.
He would disagree.
Well, that's what it does. That's what it does. It would get rid of mental health parity. It would get rid of covering someone who is in the home, a child up to year 20 to 26. But most importantly, what it would do for Lauren Hacker, who has accumulated $2 million worth of bills to take care of her AML, it would prohibit her. It would prevent her from getting the kind of insurance that she needs. It is that's what that bill would do. It would eliminate those provisions.
Don Bacon?
Well, we know Obamacare has been the worst thing for the small business community, the middle class. $500 to $700 rate increase for our families in this state, in this district, is news alone. We need to – it's one of the worst legislation ever passed. It's unfixable, and I'm going to work to replace it with reforms that will still ensure pre-existing coverage and that we can still provide Part D, prescription coverage. We can do this stuff. It's not an all-or-nothing approach, but – we want to have patient-centered health care, not federal bureaucrat-centered health care.
Since you both support strengthening the military, how do you propose to accomplish this with sequestration still in effect, Don Bacon?
Well, unfortunately, in the recent years, the Congress and the President threw 17% budget cuts of the military through sequestration. And they directed the military, you're going to do this, but you can't cut bases and you can't cut current weapon systems. So what that did is it made the military have to cut training, had to cut people, and it moved to the right, modernization. Today, our readiness is the lowest it's ever been since Vietnam, post-Vietnam. We have a military that's suffering and struggling. Those who deploy to the Middle East are ready, but those who are back at home station are not ready to deploy, and it does not provide a good deterrence for North Korea, Russia, Iran, and so forth. So I'm going to focus on training. Now, part of the problem is the president says we're not going to spend any more money on military unless you also raise domestic spending. And domestic spending's been raising all along. He's been holding hostage the defense, and it was wrong. So we need to provide some of that 17% back to the military, but we still got to hold down domestic spending. He's offering the wrong compromise, in my humble view. So I will be a strong voice for our military. I served 30 years in it, commanded 5 times. I'll be the senior or the most second senior veteran in Congress. And I plan on making that horsepower work in the Armed Services Committee. Thank you.
Brad Ashman.
Yeah. The only problem is that, Don, is that from 2011 till I got to Congress, the military was cut. Dramatically cut. Sequestration was put into place. In 2015, with the 2015 National Defense Authorization Act, we increased spending on the military for the first time since 2011 by $40 billion. And we also have, in this last NDAA, in this last National Defense Authorization Act, shifted money to readiness and shifted money to modernization so that we could bring the weapons systems that have been delayed into the military, and that was a key transfer and shift of funds. If we're going to destroy ISIS, we need an authorization for use of force. When I came back from the Middle East on my first trip to the Middle East, it was clear to me that the Congress had and the President had not given, and clearly the Congress had not given to the military not only the resources, which clearly they did not, but had not given to the military the mission. The mission is the destruction of ISIS. That should be the mission. That means social media. That means cybersecurity. That means building up our Army and our Air Force that, you're right, have been depleted by the Congresses up to 2015. So the destruction of ISIS is our number one priority. But working across the aisle in a bipartisan way, with only one vote in the Armed Services Committee, we're able to put more funds back in and create a more robust effort that we need to defeat and destroy ISIS.
Don Bacon, you have 30 seconds.
I think this past year we did make a step forward on the military spending side. I will admit that. I didn't like how it was held hostage, though, to same-dollar increases in domestic spending by the President and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi. I felt like we also have a serious deficit problem, a debt problem, and we should have been able to uptick our defense spending and not also throw our deficit and debt under the bus. Now, we need more folks that don't need on-the-job training when it comes to national security in Washington. We have a record low number of veterans. You know, and I know he's a great guy and he's working hard, but folks who know Gitmo would not have voted 3 times to close Gitmo. People would know that there is one city on the target list coming from ISIS. We would not have said that we changed the tide on ISIS on the same day that 49 Americans were killed in Orlando. I think we can do better. He's working hard, but we need more experts that know national security in Congress.
Brad Ashford, 30 seconds.
I voted on every opportunity I was given to keep Gitmo open. I have voted to prohibit any transfers out of Gitmo. when the votes you're talking, Don, and you know very well about that, the votes we're talking about were early on in the process, before the Congress had provided the, and it was not to release anybody from Gitmo, as you know. The vote was to cut off any funding to transfer people out of Gitmo. We had transferred 677 detainees out of Gitmo during the Bush and Obama administration. This was a continuation of that policy. When I was briefed that that was not the appropriate way to go in a classified briefing, of which I voted to prohibit the transfers. So it's just not an accurate situation. It's a dynamic situation, and we're briefed on it on an ongoing basis, and I acted accordingly.
New question. Much has been said about big government overreach. Are there programs or initiatives which require more federal oversight? And if you believe in less, what programs are you going to cut, Brad Ashford?
We need a lot more congressional oversight. One of the things that I found to be the case when I first got there was, first of all, the lack of time that the Congress spends on providing oversight. And I think it is that lack of willingness to work across the aisle, to build coalitions, to work with Republicans and Democrats to find a way to provide oversight. When you have a budget process, each year, a new budget, you have no time whatsoever to provide the oversight. I think we ought to do that, make those changes so that Congress is intimately involved in oversight. The other thing is, when we have such partisan gridlock where we spend time, here's something I'd like to propose, Don. I don't know what you think about this. You know, I have never in my political career, 18 years now, 16 years in the legislature, I have never worked politically against someone I work with. We need to change how we act with each other in Congress. We need to stop the situation where we're in now, where we 6 months before an election, everybody picks sides and goes at each other. We need that 6 months is valuable time for us to continue to work. So for me, building up the trust relationships I have with Jeff Fortenberry, for example, on the runway, which we've gotten done after sitting on a list for years. We've got the VA Hospital Medical Center going because we've worked in a bipartisan fashion. I will never work against or help to defeat any of my colleagues in the House. And I think we should all adopt that kind of way of working.
Don Bacon, you have a minute 30.
Yeah, you know, something I've pointed out before, my good opponent likes to talk about bipartisanship. We have to remember, though, how did we get Obamacare in the first place? It was by a bipartisan elected official in the Senate, Democrat, who was the tie-breaking vote for Obamacare. Another bipartisan Democrat was the tie-breaking vote against the balanced budget. We just know when the chips are down where he will be standing. Now, I get to Gary's question. One of the things that interests me is the government, or GAO, the audit agency, said that there is over 180 duplicate programs costing $45 billion. These are areas that are very lucrative that we need to be doing better on. In fact, in previous years, it's actually gotten bigger. So somehow or another, we have to enforce more accountability in these spending programs. I think the biggest overreach is coming from the executive branch. They're fulfilling functions that should be from the legislative branch or the Congress. The intent here was Congress passes laws, and then the executive branch executes them. But they're working around Congress. It's one of the reasons we have gridlock today, because these laws the regulations get passed, and then Congress can't get through the veto authority or filibuster authority, and they just sit there, and then it becomes lawsuits. We got to do better. That's why we needed a provision like the RAINS Act to get this right. Because we've got to get this back in the box. We have three equal branches of government, and we have a system of checks and balances again.
Brad Ashford, 30 seconds.
You know, I'm not sure where this comes from, Don, this I don't buck my party and I'm always just going to vote with Nancy Pelosi. I do have respect for Nancy Pelosi, the first woman Speaker of the House, but she has never asked me to vote for anything. I vote in a manner that she doesn't like. Many, many times I voted against the Iran deal, even though the President of the United States called me up and asked me to vote for it. I voted not to close Gitmo, even though our leadership supported closing Gitmo. I voted for veterans accountability with the Republicans. I voted with Republicans more than almost anybody in the House of Representatives, and I ranked the six most bipartisan members. I don't know where you get this, I'm not going to do this. Because the facts are that I do it, have done it, and will continue to do it.
Don Bacon?
Well, he did vote three times against Guantanamo, and he said in the newspaper, the Omaha World Herald, that he changed his mind on Guantanamo after looking at the facts. So he flip-flopped on the vote, and he's flip-flopped on his flip-flop.
What? Can I respond? Can I?
That's new, right. New question. Don Bacon, this goes to you. How should the government balance national security with personal privacy?
Can you say that again? I'm sorry. Couldn't hear.
Sure. How should the government balance national security with personal privacy?
Well, I think the two fundamental things the government does is to protect our security and our rights in the Constitution. And I think they go hand in hand. I am very reluctant to ever compromise, though, our rights in the Constitution, because once rights are given, they're very hard to get back. So I think the priority should be to protecting our rights that we get in the Bill of Rights, and then our national security. But frankly, they got to go hand in hand. We got to work it together. We just got to realize when you compromise on a fundamental right, like say the Second Amendment or the Fourth or Fifth, whatever it may be, it's so hard to get that back. So we need to treat all these rights with, you know, like treasures, because they are treasures. And we live in the oldest democracy and the oldest republic, and we have to work hard to sustain it. It's not something that's just natural. It's not going to be something just passed on naturally. We got to contend for it. And part of it's active citizens protecting their rights. We've been blessed with a great country. But so my priorities would be protecting our rights, sir, and our privacy.
Brad Ashford.
The vote on Gitmo, Don, was a vote to maintain the ability of the military, when appropriate, that was in early 2015, to transfer, as they had been doing during the Bush administration and during the Obama administration. It was nowhere near a vote to release anybody. When the conditions changed and we were in a classified briefing, it was recommended to us on the Armed Services Committee that we do not transfer any more out. And that's when I voted not to do that. I have never voted to close Gitmo. Gitmo should remain open and must remain open. I voted for the Freedom Act on the metadata issue, which I think this question is getting to. And what the Freedom Act says, under the Patriot Act, the NSA took control and ownership over metadata, basically telephone numbers, telephone numbers, cell phone numbers that were issued to individuals that have cell phones. And that was a response to the events of the day, obviously of September 11th. And we have spent a year trying to strike that balance between privacy and our national security. And we believe, and most experts believe, that the Freedom Act is a proper balance. We can do more and think more about it, but at least we did act. We acted in a bipartisan manner to pass the Freedom Act. It was bipartisan, Republicans and Democrats alike. It's another bipartisan thing that you don't think we do, but we do. And I think we need to continue on with that effort to, in light of Snowden, in light of what, quite frankly, our adversaries, the Russians, now know, we have to be very caught, and as cybersecurity becomes more of an issue.
Don Bacon, 30 seconds.
Well, one of the blessings for me working in the military, I got to work with our National Security Agency. I got to work with Cyber Command when they stood up. I've been an intelligence person for 30 years and trained our cyber warriors for the Air Force, my last two. And I think I would agree on this, that the Freedom Act was the right way to go. There was a collection of metadata, and there was a potential that could be useful. But as you look back, it really never was used effectively. And since it created so much concern, I think it was the right thing to do to move ahead and move away from that and put it and come up with a compromise that was made. I think it was the right balance.
Brad Ashford?
Thank you. thank you for that, and thank you for your service, Donna, if I have not already mentioned that, and to Angie. It's incredible, and your family, it is incredible the sacrifice that you all make. And your experience is important in cybersecurity, and that is important, and it's an important element in this. But this is a legislative job. It's not a military job. And experts like you are critical to our decision-making. And on this issue of balancing personal freedom and national security, we listen to the experts. We've listened to them in classified briefings. We meet every day in the Armed Services Committee, and we make legislative decisions to address those issues. And I think thank you for your comment, because I think we did make the right one, and we did listen to you and we did and your colleagues in making those decisions, and that's what the job's all about.
New question. Many people support term limits. However, seniority is also very helpful in Congress. What do you think? Term limits good or bad, Brad Ashford?
Well, at my age, no, I'm just so I don't know, Gary, you and I are probably. Anyway, so I'm my own term limit. I supported term limits in the legislature. I voted for a 12-year initiative. It's now 8. I think there is a balance. I do support term limits generally. I'd like us to have 4-year terms in the Congress instead of 2. 3-4-year terms, I think, makes a lot of sense. Maybe 3-6-year terms in the Senate. And it would create turnover and still allow for expertise to build up. So I agree with that. And the other thing that plays into, I think, is that being in Congress or being in the legislature is not a job. It's not a job. And you and I both agree on this. I'm going to give you what you and I both agree on. We both agree on eliminating the perks. We both agree on cutting the salaries by 10%. I give a scholarship with 10% scholarships with 10% of my money, my pay, because they won't allow me to cut my salary by 10%. And I think we do need to reduce the perks. But yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot more to be done, but I'm with you on it.
Don Bacon?
Well, to go back to the last question, Brad talks about being a career legislator or a career politician, listening to the experts. I will just tell you the number one career field in Congress right now is career politician. We've got to bring more people from the outside in. We have a broken system. The confidence is right now in our apparatus is very low. We need more successful farmers. We need more successful bankers. We need more successful medical folks. And we need more successful veterans because we're at an all-time low. We need people to know what the cost is to send people to war, to what it's like to live in a tent for 6 months, live behind the sandbags for a year, or to go to a mom and dad's house, talk about the loss of their loved one. So I think we need more of that experience in the House. Now, I do believe in term limits. I've signed on to it. I believe it should be for everybody, and mainly because today we have roughly 90 to 95% reelection rate. You know, when Abraham Lincoln was elected in 1846, it was a 50% turnover. Something has changed, and it's not for the better. We do have career politicians there, and there's a nexus of money, lobbyists, retired congressmen, and I think we should bust that up. We got to put some limits in there, prevent the congressman from retiring and then working on the lobbying field. We need single subject voting rules that will provide a little more discipline on our spending, because we do these omnibus bills that and then people pack in more spending. There are so many more things that we just got to make those fundamental changes so we can bring in folks that will actually make decisions that move the ball down the field instead of doing the Washington politics as usual. You know, we haven't talked about the debt yet today. $19.5 trillion debt. We're going backwards. We've gone backwards the last 2 years. We got to do better.
You know, I think you both pretty much agree on this, unless you – can we go on to a new question?
I do want to briefly talk about this concept of career politician. I think – you know, I would agree with you, Don, if I was one. You know, that we have too many career politicians, I agree. But quite frankly, in Nebraska, the Nebraska way is basically for citizens, whether it's in the county board or the city council or the legislature, who have lots of other jobs like I have. My family's been in business in Nebraska since 1858. They had jobs and they go off and they do their public service. That's not a career politician. That isn't one. When I was in the legislature, I had another job. I raised a family. I had 2 other jobs. So I respect your service. That's a job. It's also public service.
I do think that, well, Brad and I probably disagree on the definition of career politician. Then. I mean, he's been doing this for 30, 32 years. And fact is, I just think by definition, if someone's had 5 different party registrations to align with different races, opportunism with each race. What party can I need to be in to win this race? Whether it was Congress the first time in the 90s or running for mayor, it's been pragmatism of wherever he could fit in to run. And I think that's part of a definition of a career politician.
Parties, if I could, I think I have. Parties make no difference to me. I could care less.
Evidently.
They don't. Yeah. They don't. And that I don't care about them. I don't. I'm appreciative to the Democratic Party for giving me an opportunity to serve in an office I always wanted to serve in. But I served in a nonpartisan unicameral legislature where parties make no difference. And I think my record as the sixth most bipartisan member of Congress reflects the fact that parties make no difference. That's the Nebraska way. That's how we are.
And I was going to cut this off. Don, Megan, you have any response?
Yeah, he says he's the sixth most bipartisan, but yet it is 80% of the time with Nancy Pelosi. That is an extreme voting record. It's and as I mentioned the other day, it's only moderate if you live in California or New York. It's not moderate in Nebraska. By the way, it's not about really Nancy Pelosi. It's what she wants to do for our country. When she led as a speaker in 2008 through 10, it was a very far left, aggressive, partisan way. We could not afford to have her again as speaker. And Brad said he would vote for her even if he didn't agree with her on anything in a recent newspaper article. I think she'd be wrong as the third most powerful person in our government leading us. And I surely wouldn't vote for her for speaker, let alone 80% of the time when we vote.
New question. Social Security may face a serious shortfall in the future. What measures, if any, would you suggest to offset that shortfall, Don Bacon?
Well, thank you. And as the last moderator at the debate asked, hey, Brad, are you going to speak up about the non-truth that's being said by Nancy Pelosi on Don Bacon? Because I have never said I want to raise the retirement age for anybody in retirement or nearing retirement or nearing retirement. And they've already spent $1 million to say this lie. It's a lie. And I have said that I want to fix Social Security. And leaders stand up to fix things. They don't demagogue and politicize things. Politicians, they don't come up with solutions, but they demagogue those who are trying to. AARP asks us to stand tall on this, come up with solutions. I have. Even Senator Kerry said we need to raise the retirement age. I'm talking about for guys under 30. Senator Hagel has said it. So if we don't do anything, Social Security is going to go insolvent by 2032 to 2035. Everybody on it will take a 26% pay cut. We need leaders to step forward and provide solutions. Now, Brad, during the last debate, said, Don, I've offered solutions. I was unaware that he had. I saw one where, well, we need to work together to fix this. Well, that didn't have a lot of meat on it. You know, I was like, what is that? I mean, what's the tangible proposals there? So we did a lot of searching in the newspapers. We did find one, and we brought the article in today, and we'll have it available, where he proposed a 20% reduction in Social Security. It's quoted in the Omaha World Herald, along with a 20% reduction in Medicare. That's the only proposal I've seen.
Brad Ash?
First of all, the ads. You know, neither of us have – we both dislike them, right? We both dislike the ads. We ought to get rid of Citizens United so that those ads will go away, and number one. And number two, you did say that you wanted the retirement age lowered during the primary, and you didn't put any qualifiers on it. But I didn't do the ads, but I didn't vote to release detainees from Gitmo either. And I'm not for sanctuary cities either. So if we both want to make a change, let's make a change and vote to get rid of Citizens United. So then we won't see those ads anymore, and we'll have control over our ads. As far as Social Security, I support an initiative that will take the payroll tax above $400,000. It's now at $118,000. We keep the donut hole going. Then at $400,000, the payroll tax would come back in. If you combine that with other changes, you don't have to raise the retirement age. 67 is just fine. You have people working in jobs, nurses, people working with their hands, that, quite frankly, 67 years old is fine for the retirement age. And there are a lot of pension plans out there where retirement age is a lot lower than that. So let's stick with what we've got. You don't have to raise the retirement age. You have to raise the payroll tax over a certain limit. So I'm for that that initiative and other initiatives for it. I've never supported reducing Medicare or any of that stuff.
Well, we got the newspaper article.
Well, that's fine. Let's look at the newspaper article.
We got to go. Don Baker,
where do we
got
go?
30 seconds.
Oh.
You know, we used to have 42 people paying in for Social Security for every one paying out. Now it's three. It's soon to be two. And I think we just got to reflect, let's look at the situation and deal with it honestly. Now, I understood Brad's proposal to raise the payroll tax above $400,000. I can't tell if you're saying from zero to all the way to 400 or just above 400?
I said 400? The gap is above 400,000. It's 118,000 yeah. now. We go up to 400,000 and raise the payroll tax over that.
Yeah, I think it's important that we do. There's 12 different proposals in AARP that they've put out, and it's going to take a combination of things to get it done. But we're going to have to make the hard decisions to do this, because if not, 2032, 35, we're going to take a big pay cut, and it's not fair to our seniors. I think, though, the life expectancy for those under 30 is 84. You know, it's something we just have to realize and be honest about it.
Brad Ashford, 30 seconds.
We can make the Social Security system solvent for 75 years by taking the payroll tax above 400,000 and making other changes along the way, and actually increase the benefits to seniors, especially middle class and low income seniors. And we can do that by sharing the responsibility more equitably and fairly. And that's what we need to do. Why do we want to raise the retirement age if we don't have to raise the retirement age? There are people, when you've worked to 67, which is next month for me, when you've worked to 67, mm-hmm. you know, you've worked a long time, and there are a lot of people that have put in a lot of time. And I think the retirement age should be exactly where it is. You don't need to change it.
All right, final question, and timer, we're getting close to the end here, and we're running out of time, so we're only going to give each of them 30 seconds on this. I think it'll be easy for you to do in 30 seconds. Brad Ashford, what politician of the other party do you most admire, and why?
Ronald Reagan. I mean, yeah, Ronald Reagan got growth to 5%, and Jack Kennedy got GDP growth to 5%. We did it by a combination of investing in our economy, lowering tax rates, investing in our military, saying no to the Russians, by the way. Both Jack Kennedy and Ronald Reagan said no to the Russians, and that's why we have to have a no-fly zone and a safe zone in Syria. But we have to, it's leadership, and Ronald Reagan definitely led this country to a place economically where more people were working, he's the guy I think I most would emulate.
Don Bacon?
I assume you met somebody that was alive, so I'm going to go with Congressman Bishop, I think, a Democrat from Georgia, who is a guy that talks a lot about fiscal responsibility, regulation. So it's a guy that we could reach across the aisle and work on. Frankly, I have a lot of respect for Secretary of Defense Panetta, a Democrat from California who ran our defense. I've got to work with him. I thought he carried himself in a very good manner. Let me go back to the Social Security proposal from Brad, though. You know, 38 cents out of every dollar is already taxed, and I don't think we should be raising taxes anymore. Right now, 42 cents on every dollar is spent on government. They tax 38 cents on every dollar. I would be opposed to raising it above 38 cents.
Time now for 2-minute final statements. And Brad Ashford, you're first.
The Social Security system is a pension plan. We need to fund it. We haven't made a change since the Reagan administration, when Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan worked together to get it done. And we need to do that. And that brings up my point. I mean, I went to Congress 2 years ago, and I promised that I would work across the aisle and make change, and that we would make changes that are substantive and meaningful by working across the aisle. The Veterans Hospital has been on a list for years. Nothing has been done. A week after I came to Congress, I went to see Bob McDonald, who is the chairman, secretary of the VA, and I said, Bob, can we do something to get the Veterans Hospital done? He said, yeah, let's work on it. I went to Republicans and Democrats alike, Jeff Fortenberry and I working together, Deb Fisher in the Senate, to come up with a plan for the Veterans Hospital. It passed the House Veterans Committee unanimously, Republicans and Democrats. A new plan, only in Omaha will this be done. A public-private partnership where private donors and the federal government work together to build a center that veterans need and deserve. That's a result. That's a bipartisan solution. When Jeff Miller from the Veterans Administration, I was told, you can't talk to Jeff Miller. He's the chairman. You know, he's the Republican chairman. I said, why not? I just go talk to him. I said, Jeff, will you support this? Because that's how we work in Nebraska. It's a Nebraska way. He said, yes, I'll support it. The runway. How many years? When you were there, the runway was a mess. When I flew in with President Obama, I said, hang on to your chair, because this is an awful runway. Mr. President, we got the runway done. It's been sitting there for years. We got the runway done. with Governor Ricketts and Jeff Fortenberry and myself. With David Young, we've got Sarah, a Republican from Iowa. We're introducing the Sarah Root bill so that violent, undocumented individuals are put into the custody of the of immigration and of ICE. We can work together. That's what I promised to do. That's what I did. I was the 6th most bipartisan member of the House. I promised to do that, and I would appreciate your vote. And thank you, Gary. Thanks to the League.
Don Bacon, you have 2 minutes.
Well, I sure appreciate Chairman Miller's support for our campaign, Senator Fisher, Jeff Fortenberry. Been blessed to have them as advisors and supporters. Now, I think this race is between – it's breaking out of the same old Washington, D.C. that we've had going on for decades that put us in the same mess that's gotten us in the mess that we're in. I'm a 30-year service guy. I think Brad's been serving in politics for 30 years. I've commanded 5 times. He's had 5 different party affiliations and registrations. I think that's just a different background. And I take bipartisanship in a little bit different way. I don't believe it's something that's based on poll reading or flip-flopping or reach it, you know, just one way it's this that way, and then the next day it's something like over here. I believe bipartisanship is knowing what your goals, your values, your principles are, your priorities, and then you reach across the aisle and work to get to achieve those goals for your country. It may not be as fast as you want it. It may be some compromises to get there, but I fundamentally think that we have 4 things we got to work on. We got to control spending and reduce our debt. $19.5 trillion, it's broke. We have a bureaucracy that's killing small business community. We can't grow because of the bureaucratic mess we're in. Thirdly, we got a broken tax code, the highest business tax in the free world. 7 different rates. And Hillary Clinton wants to add an 8th rate. We need to get it down and simplify it. And we have a broken national security strategy. And I'd like to come in and be a strong voice with that. But we can't do that stuff unless we change Washington. That's why I'm a strong proponent for term limits, prohibiting retired lawmakers from becoming lobbyists, doing the single subject of voting law. We need to do things that will fundamentally change how Washington works. I ask for your vote. I ask for your support. I am very grateful for everybody being here today. And my thanks to Brad and our great moderator. Thank you.
Well, that concludes our debate. Let's thank these candidates for agreeing to debate.
You've been listening to a special luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we've heard a debate between the two candidates running for the United States House of Representatives from Nebraska's 2nd Congressional District. The participants were incumbent Democrat Brad Ashford, seeking his second term in Congress, and challenger Republican Don Bacon, retired Brigadier General in the United States Air Force, and currently Assistant Professor in the Bellevue University College of Business. This program, co-sponsored by the League of Women Voters of Greater Omaha, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Friday afternoon, October 14, 2016, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Listen this coming Monday, November 7th at 12 noon, for the final pre-election program on Noon Forum. We'll hear a lecture from the E.N. Thompson Forum on World Issues. The guest speaker will be David Brooks, internationally renowned op-ed columnist with the New York Times, a regular analyst on NPR's All Things Considered, and author of The Road to Character. He'll speak on the topic, It's Better Than It Looks, Election 2016. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 600 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.